League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I'm going to try and make it through, Joey. Hey. I'm going to try and make it through.
Aren't we all?
I don't know how this is going to go, everyone, but pray for me.
Okay, well, I think you should change your attitude and try again.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of I Think Not's True Crime Rundown. I am your host, Ellen Marsh, and across from me is my better half, Joey Taranto, and my former better half, Sergeant Detective Anthony Rakowski. We will get all into it, but welcome, Anthony. We've missed you. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I missed you guys too. Doing well. Thank you.
For those of you who are new here, oh boy, what a story. Anthony, were you a sergeant back in the disappeared days?
No, for disappeared, I was a detective.
Well, yeah. Sergeant Detective came to us during episode 111 when we were covering the Angel Garcia case that took place in Hartford, Connecticut. And you know how Joey and I are. And our sweet, handsome sergeant over here was wearing a very ill-fitting suit.
And that's when we meet Detective Anthony Rakowski of the Hartford Police Department. This man is a looker. He's got a buzz cut, a dimple in his chin, and a place in my bed whenever he wants.
Just as I'm about to engrave my wedding invitations with the hot detective, I see him walking in that suit.
I didn't pay attention to the suit. I was only looking at the face.
Okay. Well, that was the most ill-fitting suit I have ever seen in my life. It was like he got locked out of his apartment that day, and he went to some dude at the gym who shops at the Big and Tall store. He's like, bro, do you have a suit? I have this thing for disappeared today. And he's like, I just need a suit.
Ellen, you can fix that.
I don't have a lot of secondhand embarrassment because I have my hands full with my firsthand embarrassment. But I was deeply embarrassed for this man.
We dragged him for about 55 minutes about it. And somehow he got wind of our episode and he has never lived it down. He has been stuck with us ever since.
Fact. Yeah, fact.
Well, if you haven't listened to that episode, definitely go back, because one of the things that drew us to the sergeant was just how awesome he was, because we see so many times where we see botched investigations or we just see people that aren't working in the best interest of the victims and the victim's family. And Anthony was just one of those guys that changed the narrative, and we loved that about him, and we've gotten to know him over the years. And poor thing didn't know what he was signing up for, because anytime I have a law enforcement question, I call him up and hold him hostage on the phone. True or false, Anthony?
No, it's true, but I love it. I appreciate the opportunity to at least try to explain some of the challenges we go through, you know? So thank you guys for that.
I think it's really important. So whenever I have questions, Anthony always, first of all, he always answers them very patiently, and he takes the time to explain both sides. And I was like, Anthony, you have to dive into this Karen Reed trial. And he was like, oh yeah, that's the guy who, I was like, stop. Go read, watch, come back to me. One of the things I kept coming back to Anthony about was the investigation and corruption. And we've been talking, and I think it's a really important conversation. We trust Anthony. He's very smart, not when it comes to computers, because you all, this recording took us the better part of a day. But we've just been talking about corruption and things that might or might not happen. So we have a list of questions. But first, Anthony, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm an identical twin. Some people know, some people don't. But I also work with my twin brother. We share an office, so it's a lot of fun. Just, you know, as far as like my pedigree goes, I've been in law enforcement over 20 years at this point, major crime and investigating homicide specifically. Aside from that, I'm married to Colleen. I have two kids. They keep me busy and grounded, which I appreciate. But I mean, it's a pretty standard bio.
Before we jump into everything, for those of you who don't know, Anthony, I made this joke during the episode that Anthony was my ex-boyfriend and I hated that suit on him. His wife knows about our past. He's even in my phone as ex-boyfriend Anthony. Now, Anthony, we actually requested you to wear a very specific uniform today.
I'm just having trouble figuring out. Yeah, I don't know which way it goes. So.
And, you know, I can't even use pride as an excuse. It's July 1st. So my month right. is time and is come and gone.
I just figured we were going to adequately harass you about your dashing good looks. The shirtless pics that are on your Instagram, I figured I would just give you a leg up. You know, you're welcome.
No, I appreciate it. Hey, while we're talking about that, can I comment on Joey's fitness lately?
Yeah.
Very, very impressed with that, Joey. All kidding aside, you look fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's not easy to do. So congrats to you. Nice work.
I appreciate that. And, you know, it's a good thing that it's not June, because what I would have said to you is if you really cared about being an ally, you would just lay on top of me for 5 minutes. And that's it. Nothing else. Like, fully clothed, just like... Y'all, I want y'all to know that this is the kind of relationship we have with him. I am not harassing. I am not being a creep, okay? I wish you could see. I don't know if you're following the text or the chat. Someone was like, he's hot. Is he single? Someone said he's married. Is his twin brother single? Okay.
And it should be said, his beautiful wife is a teacher. And we were just talking, teachers, they work so freaking hard. So I'm glad to hear she's taking this summer off. Now, I wanted to ease you into this. You know how Joey eased you into anal back a couple of years ago. So I wanted to ask you a couple questions. Look at his face. He gets so red, you guys. We've been online
hilarious.
With him.
Yeah, it's so
He's
fun.
So easy to get. Okay, I have some really simple questions, just some icebreaker questions for you, just okay. in terms of the Karen Reed case, loosely based. Sergeant Detective Anthony Rakowski, have you ever put blood from a decedent in a solo cup or any cup for that matter?
No, absolutely not.
Have you ever used ShopRite bags for evidence?
No.
Okay. Have you ever used a leaf blower on a crime scene?
Yes.
For snow?
No, not for snow.
Okay. Have you ever had a false memory of an event taking place?
Absolutely not.
Have you ever texted that a possible suspect has a leaky balloon knot?
No, absolutely not.
A leaky balloon knot. That's what Michael Proctor said about Karen Reed, because she's got Crohn's.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. Do you believe that police officers or any civil servants above the law?
Absolutely not.
And are you wearing underwear?
Absolutely not.
All right. I begged Anthony to start a podcast. Do you remember what I named your podcast?
Good Apple.
The
right?
Good Apple. Yeah. I think this is a really important conversation, and Anthony and I talk about it a lot. And I want you to clarify. Do you ever feel like the narrative that is out there, the Karen Reed trial, do you ever feel you're defending yourself in any way? Because you are really, truly one of the good ones. We've talked about a lot of things that have happened in different cases. You always give a really good perspective. Just kind of the way the world is right now, how does it feel to be an ethical and a police officer with integrity right now in the world?
What gets challenging or hard, I guess I would say, and not so much a challenge, is, you know, you hear stories about other cops, right? And stupid things that they do and situations they put themselves in. This is one of those vocations where that affects every single one of us. There are times where the criticism that draws, it's warranted. People should be critical of cops. We do need to be held to a higher standard. Like, I agree with all of that. And I don't disagree with being criticized. What happens sometimes, though, is that criticism, it kind of spins out of control. And there's times then where we're criticized and we shouldn't be. And that's when you want to almost defend yourself and be like, hey, look, this is what's actually happening. And when you try to do that, it comes across like you're asking for a pass, you know, like, give me the benefit of the doubt. That's something that's uncomfortable for me, because we should need benefit of the doubt, right? We need to hold ourselves accountable to that standard. It shouldn't be questioned at all. And if people are questioning that, I think we failed in general, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you know of the Karen Reed case because I forced you to.
Yes.
And I want you to sort of walk through. You are a sergeant detective. Can you just explain what that means in terms of who you report to and who your subordinates are?
I'll say this, though, before I start. Like, every department is going to be structured a little bit different. So for me, as a detective sergeant, that means that I'm a supervisor in the detective bureau. My specific crime type is I supervise our homicide team. I have nine detectives that work directly for me, and our main function is to go out and investigate homicides. Now, other crime types get tacked onto that just because of manpower shortages and things like that. The detectives will be the lead investigators, right? Whatever detective I assign to the case. My job is to make sure that they do their job correctly. So ultimately, I'm responsible for that overall investigation.
Okay.
It comes down to me. Now, I'm not necessarily the one doing every interview. I'm not the one, you know, writing every report or warrant or whatever. I'm responsible to review everyone. And if there's a step that's being missed, it's my job to make sure it doesn't get missed. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where having the experience as an investigator, as the detective, is important, because I know that job. I did it, you know.
Right.
With that, my supervisor is the rank of lieutenant. My brother, he's the supervisor, and he does the non-fatal shooting. So if someone doesn't die in the shooting, his team will investigate that. So we both answer up to our lieutenant. And then our lieutenant, we have a captain that is his supervisor, deputy chief, and then chief.
I think it's important to note that whatever the people below you do, you are ultimately responsible.
Absolutely.
Really important that the people who work under you are working to your standard, or else.
Yeah, it's my job. My primary function is to set that standard, you know, mm-hmm. and we don't deviate.
Right.
So
I have a lot of questions in the bigger picture of everything that we saw in Karen Reed, but I want you to take a moment, and just from you, and I understand things may vary. There is protocol, but can you give us the gist? If this case were under your control, you show up at 34 Fairview in Canton, and there is a deceased Boston police officer on the lawn of the home of another police officer. Can you just give us an idea of what goes through your mind as to what needs to be done and in what order of what you would do if this were your case?
Okay. The primary function is life safety, first and foremost. Their primary function is to make sure if this person needs help, we need to get them help, try to save them, and make the scene safe for anybody else responding. After that's done, you move to preservation of the scene and evidence, and then to witnesses, right?
Right. Okay.
So the way it works for us is once those officers get out there and they said, hey, listen, we have a deceased person. We don't know the circumstances yet. The scene is secured. I'm starting to mobilize my team. I'm going to ask a bunch of questions at that point. And my questions are all going to relate to, what are you seeing out there? I have to try to, based on this quick interview with this officer, determine, is this a foul play situation? Is this an untimely death? Is it an exposure thing? What are we looking at here? Because that'll dictate what the response is. So we have to try to at least get as good of an understanding as we can right up front. In this particular case, I would have asked the questions about injuries. Are you seeing trauma? Of course, there's obvious trauma. I don't expect the officer on scene to tell me what the mechanism of that trauma is, but they can say, listen, there's injuries here. And that's going to kind of tip a flag. The number one priority is to identify the deceased. We start all of our investigations with the victim and its victimology. Who is this person? Is this somewhere they shouldn't be? Should be? If he's on the property of an address, who lives here? Does he live here? These injuries, is there evidence of these injuries occurring outside? Am I seeing blood out here? Is this a secondary scene or the primary scene? His injuries, are they so severe that he couldn't have moved himself, or was he possibly ambulatory and came out of the house and collapsed here? Those are all things we're going to look for. Biggest thing is, who lives in this house? Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, if I find out, I identify my victim and find out he's an off-duty police officer, okay, we treat every case the same. I don't care if you're a cop, if you're a politician, if I don't care. Like, I'm treating this case the same, no matter who the victim is. We treat them all like they're high profile, because they are. Right? These are people. Mm-hmm. But once I find out he's a cop and I learn that the person in that house is also a cop, mm-hmm. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And not necessarily at that point, if I don't have any evidence to suggest there's culpability on the person in that house, okay, that's fine. But I still have questions, right?
Right.
As a police officer, you're expected to be the best witness. If you're present for something and you can't intervene, like, for example, if I'm with my son and someone's robbing a bank and I'm unarmed, right? I'm not going to put my son in harm's way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be the best witness I can be. If someone's hurt, I'm going to help them immediately. That's mm-hmm. my job. That's what I swore an oath to. But I also have to protect my son, you know? Mm-hmm. A different circumstance, but
Totally. Yeah.
You still have a function, even if you're not taking immediate action, is my point. I would be thrilled to know that there's a cop here because now I can virtually guarantee that I have cooperation. That's something that we face all the time, where people, they see what happened, but they're afraid to cooperate, or they just don't want to cooperate, or they know the person who's culpable, they want to protect them. So the person in that house is very important.
If you were to ever find out that one of your detectives didn't go in the house, and you're like, okay, so the homeowner, because we know in this case, they didn't enter the house, they didn't question anyone in the house. The defense made a really good point and said, how do you know everyone inside is okay?
They're absolutely right. Can I pause this and just make one explanation here that I think is important for people to know? In everything that I've seen so far, this hasn't really been stated openly.
Great.
Departments are structured different. Like my department, we're in a city. We have a lot of resources. Unfortunately, we deal with a lot of homicide. We do those investigations soup to nuts. We have our own crime scene people. We have a lot of our own lab equipment. I have a whole team of people to investigate these incidents. Smaller departments that don't have a lot of homicide investigations or none at all, they don't have those resources. So what'll happen is when you have a homicide, the local department will go out there, they'll secure things. But then there's a conversation as who's actually going to investigate this? Mm-hmm. And in this case here, you had the state police actually took over the investigation. That happens even with small towns here in Connecticut. In that interim time there, there's a time frame where you have a scene held, the officers on scene don't know who is actually doing that investigation yet. Mm-hmm. State police is going to come in, they're going to take all of this. Or are we going to do some interviews and they're going to do some interviews? Those are conversations that happen in real time. It's case by case, depending on how that's decided. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for people to know, because if you're going to question the Canton officer that arrived on scene, why didn't they do X, Y, and Z? It's very likely that they didn't know, are we able to do this, or is this something that state police is going to do?
But no,
they didn't. No, yeah. Of course.
But I understand what's our jurisdiction? Where do we fit?
I mean, it's all your jurisdiction, but the decision's going to be made who's better suited to do this investigation.
Yeah.
I want people to understand that that's a process, you know?
Yeah.
Getting back to your question, for us, I know going out there what my role is. This is mine. Like, we own this. Mm-hmm. When you talk about what happens when the officer doesn't go in that house, that's where I step in as a supervisor. We're going in that house. You know, I watched one clip about a retired lieutenant who was kind of justifying, well, we didn't have the information to write a search warrant. Well, there's nothing stopping you from asking for consent, right? Mm-hmm. There's exceptions to the search warrant. Exigency is one of them. If you can articulate the fact that, hey, I believe somebody might be hurt inside, mm-hmm. you're looking at that crime scene. If I see blood droplets leading up the front stairs, I'm coming in that house no matter what. I have an obligation to. I can't search things, but I'm looking for people that are hurt. But this is where I think the supervisors fell a little short, because if the detectives aren't recognizing this avenue that they need to take, it's on the supervisor to not let that pass. One other consideration that you kind of have to think, and I'm sorry if I'm talking too much here, there's just a lot to put out there.
No, this is what we need. We need your perspective, but we don't know. We're just muggles.
You know, there's a lot to this, and every case is different. This particular case with Canton PD, right? What is the experience level of the officers out there? What's the experience level of the supervisors out there?
About yours. A lot of them are hovering around 20 years.
They might have 20 years experience, but in a town that sees one homicide every 5 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
They're essentially rookies when it comes to this crime type.
Uh-huh.
And this is where having people who are specialized in certain crime types, it goes a long way. You know those boundaries of the Fourth Amendment. You know, these are my avenues I can take as far as writing a search warrant and getting into a location or seeing somebody's cell phone records. That comes with experience. You can't just go take a class in the academy and all of a sudden you're an expert at that.
Yeah.
I think that played a part here.
Yeah.
And some of the things that got missed.
The basic things, like how to collect evidence and how to go into the house.
That is disgusting to me, what happened here, you know? Is there a time and a place where you have to improvise to protect evidence? Like right now, it's absolutely pouring outside. And if I had blood evidence that I wanted to protect, might I have to take something that's available to me in the moment to shield that from water? Sure. If it's going to snow, like I've had cases where it's starting to snow, I don't want to lose shell casings. We put a pop-up tent over it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to improvise to protect that scene in that moment.
But do you have solo cups or?
No. But when it comes to actually collecting that evidence, right, you have to protect the integrity of that evidence. Mm-hmm. Is a solo cup sterile? No.
Yeah.
That's basic stuff that anybody who went through the police academy should know. And those are the things that there is no justification for whatsoever. That's just sloppy, to say the
now,
least.
Now, how would you handle that? If one of your subordinates, if an officer, a rookie officer, to your point, mishandled a crime scene, how do you handle that? Is there going back? If he was like, I didn't go in the house, would you be like, what the hell? Let's go to the house. How do you handle a mishap?
And that's like the thing. Like, do those things happen? Of course, we're human beings. And your interpretation of evidence in a circumstance is going to be different than mine. It's going to be different than my brother's. It's going to be different than the detectives. This is where communication amongst your team is important. The way I operate with our guys and girls at my PD is we have like these check-ins throughout the investigation, right? Where we all get together. Hey, what do we have here? What evidence can we exploit? How do we get to direct evidence? That's what we're chasing. Circumstantial evidence is okay. Direct evidence, that's what we're after. There'll be conversations sometimes and truthfully heated disagreements where I say we have it to write a search warrant and my brother says we don't. I have a whiteboard in our office. We'll bullet point our probable cause and illustrate, look, this is everything you have. And sometimes it's like, wow, I do have that. Let's try it. Let's write it. One thing I can say too, and I don't want to get all over the map. I want to stay on track here, but with these cases, in my experience, and I've testified dozens and dozens of times on cases, that's where the rubber meets the road is when you testify. It's never really what you did do. It's what you didn't do that is scrutinized, that ruins your case and bites you in the ass. Even if you don't, if you're questioning if you had a search warrant to go in that house, you still try. Mm-hmm. You let the court be the ones to say, hey, we don't think you have it. At least you tried. Mm-hmm. That's one of those areas in this case that I take a huge issue with. If you couldn't get consent, fine. At least try.
Yeah. But
especially given the fact, like, didn't.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say they didn't try.
And they knew him. They knew who was in the house. They knew exactly whose house. They all went to high school together. So
yeah. One thing that we pay real close attention to is a conflict of interest.
This is a big sticking point in the case. They all knew each other. The lead investigator, the disgraced trooper knew them. They've all been best men. They've all known each other 30 years. You can't go back and erase time. What about that conflict of interest? How should it have been handled?
Look at judges and attorneys. If they're asked to represent someone or to try a case and they know the people involved, they recuse themselves. I can't be the one to do this. I can guarantee you there's a member of Massachusetts State Police that didn't know these guys. They're there.
Yeah.
If you knew these people that are involved and you're like, hey, listen, even if I do the best job possible here, if I do everything by the book, at some point, it's going to get questioned that I overlooked something, I omitted something because I know these people. You bow out because the integrity of the case is more important than anything else. Even though the next person coming in is going to do the same exact investigation, in this case, hopefully a better one, but even though they come in and do the same investigation, you are doing everything you can do to protect the integrity of that moving forward. Because at the end of the day, we have a person that lost their life and you have a family that's grieving, that wants closure, that deserves that. It's our duty to make sure we give that to them. Anything that we can do to make that successful, we have to do. And that's what I wish was done here. There's times, you know, I've had to arrest our own officers before. It's just by nature of my position. They asked me to investigate them and to do that. When you have to do that, do I know that officer personally? No, my department's big enough where I didn't know them. But you know it's going to be scrutinized.
I love you so much. You're such a good guy. How, I mean, we have a past, but we won't talk about it today. How does it...
I still love you.
I always come to you with stuff like this, right? I'm always like, make me see the other side. We've had long conversations.
Well, and that's what I appreciate about you, because you give that opportunity, you know?
Joey and I were emotional. I see a family and I want answers for them. And I understand protocol. And sometimes protocol seems really callous. And sometimes the judicial system seems really callous. But when it comes down to it, how does it make you feel when you see law enforcement officers compromise the integrity of the badge? Every day you leave your wife and kids, you're going out there and you're literally putting your life on the line. Does that feel like a punch in the gut? Explain that to us.
And it does, absolutely, because it's beyond my control. I can't control what the next officer is going to do. My hope is that they hold themselves to the higher standard that we all expect them to. And when they don't, it's frustrating and it's maddening. What I've noticed throughout my career is a lot of times the people that do that, there were red flags. Some people should have never been hired. Sometimes we hire people for the wrong reasons and it comes back and it bites you in the ass. This is just one of those jobs. And there's really not many others that I can think of where an officer on the West Coast does something stupid and that will directly impact us on the East Coast. Within hours. Find me another job that happens with, you know, and knowing how that works, we can't afford for someone to do something stupid. And every time they do, it's a setback. You know, you hear one step forward and two steps back. We don't even get that one step forward. It takes years to get that step forward. And by the time we do, here comes somebody else doing something else stupid. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating. It's deflating almost. I don't know how else to say it. Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting to me because you talked a lot about procedure at a crime scene and showing up at a crime scene where there is a deceased officer and there are other officers who are involved now in this crime scene who understand procedure and understand what it means to cooperate with an investigation.
Yeah.
If they know that, wouldn't they be like, no, go in the house, like do what you got to do to figure this out. But they didn't do that.
It's a massive red flag. And could it be that this person just doesn't want to be involved? But that ship has sailed. This guy's in your front yard. You have to be involved. I'm sorry. You're involved. If anything else, knowing the dynamic of what's going on here, I'm a police officer. That deceased person is a police officer. He's on my property, right? Let me help show you that I'm not involved, if that's the most you can do. Hey, I have cameras on my house. Come on in. Let me show them to you. Oh, and by the way, while you're in here, they're looking around. There's nothing out of place. There's not a stitch of carpet out of place, right? Why wouldn't you cooperate? You need to be the best witness at that point. And if the best witness means I'm letting them clear me, because if they clear me as a suspect, guess what? That can't be used down the road at a trial. I can't be that the unnamed person that did this wrong. You're helping that case directly by letting these officers clear you.
Mm-hmm. If you arrive at a scene like that and you're being met with resistance, maybe, you know, not full cooperation, what's your reaction to that?
Like I said, it's a red flag immediately. An advantage that we have, and unfortunately I've had to use this before, is that person is bound by a code of conduct from their department. If you're outwardly refusing to cooperate with me, just because you're employed by a police department doesn't mean the department can overstep your Fourth Amendment rights. I'll be clear on that. To some degree, you can be compelled to cooperate because of the internal aspect of that. You're required to. It's part of your code of conduct. If we had to go that route, I would certainly take it, because above all else, that case is the most important thing.
Right.
The person who's deceased, yeah, they're a cop. That's important here, but they're a person.
Yeah.
I don't even look at that. The fact that this is a Boston police officer, it hits home because it's a brotherhood, right? And sisterhood. That's a fact. But they're no more important than any other victim. I think that you cannot let that get in the way of anything else. And this has been said about me personally. Like when I would get a case, you're a freight train on the tracks. If you're in my way, I'm going through you. I'm solving this case. And somebody's going to jail for this because that's what I'm here for. And if it's an officer standing in the way, guess what? You're on the wrong side of the train. That's what I wish happened here. You know,
right.
Do I think that this officer refused to cooperate? I don't know based on what I've seen, but I think he should have volunteered more, a lot more. And again, when you talk about the integrity of a case, especially one involving police officers, that stinks. You know, that stinks. That's something that an experienced officer should have recognized, and he should have recognized and not let happen, in my opinion.
He's so good, Anthony.
I know. He's the best. Do you believe in your heart that unethical behavior within law enforcement, do you think it's a real problem, or do you think it is just a series of isolated events? This case has shown a huge light on the things that can happen. And let me be clear, Joey and I say this all the time. Of course there's bad cops. There's also bad doctors and bad priests and bad teachers.
Sure.
Like the difference is you all get to carry guns and you know, have access to stuff we don't. Do you think it's a problem?
I mean, if there's one cop in the country that's unethical, it's a problem. There's no like threshold to me where I'm like, well, okay, we're doing pretty good. It's only so many, you know, there shouldn't be even one. And that's, and I genuinely, in my heart of hearts, I believe that. I don't think that this is like a systemic, every department is corrupt. I don't see that at all. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds of cops that I work with that I trust without second thought. In other departments, the same thing. But it's so easy to create that. It breeds that idea once you see one unethical cop, or in this case, maybe multiple. That's the side effect of this. That's why we can't have even one, you know, because now everyone's credibility, the credibility of the profession in general, is in question. And you just can't afford that. We can't have that. I guess in short, to answer your question, I don't think this is a systemic problem. I think it's isolated, but we shouldn't even have that.
Yeah. What was your take on Officer Nick Barrows? Because I said that would be Anthony if he was called to the stand. Nick Barrows was called by the defense, for those of you who don't know, and he was a Daughton police officer, no connection to anyone in Canton. And he was the one who got up, took the same oath that everyone else did as a witness. And he was like, the taillight wasn't like that. What did you think of him and his testimony? I know you and I spoke about that briefly.
Part of me wants to say he's a remarkable human being, right? He did the right thing, but I expect that of him. He did exactly what he's supposed to do. Does it warm my heart that with all that was going on, all the attention on this case, that he did that? Absolutely. You know, one thing we can't lose sight of, right, is Karen Reed. You know, you focus on on the victim, as you should. But if you are putting someone through what she went through unnecessarily, you're ruining another life.
Right.
Yeah.
How much stress, how much financial burden did she go through that she shouldn't have? That's, again, something that you got to keep in your mind here when you're talking about this. Mm-hmm. I think he did exactly what he was supposed to do. I was thrilled to see him do that and stay mm-hmm. with that. I think it shows people, too, that there are good cops out there that will stand up, even when it's against your own.
Yeah. And I think that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because there are, and there are shitty ones. And, you sure. know, he was very brave, which is crazy. Do you think he received any kind of backlash? I don't know. That whole blue code, that blue line brotherhood thing. I don't know.
Some of that is born from like the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do cops protect cops physically? Yes. If someone's going to attack you, I'm going down with you, period. That's what it is. But do you protect cops from themselves when they're unethical? No. Nobody hates a dirty cop more than another cop. That's a fact mm-hmm. because of what it costs all of us. And I think if he got heat for testifying truthfully, then anyone giving him heat is the problem.
Yeah, that's right? what I was going to say, is because you are so good and you don't think that way, you know, you are there for the right reasons. But it's interesting because if there is someone who is, you know, a walking red flag and they happen to be in cahoots with a couple of other folks who are in red, you know, who are also walking red flags, they're not going to cross that line for someone. Whereas you wouldn't think twice about it because you understand your moral obligation.
Yep.
I have a question on that. Like, speaking of retaliation, I was wondering what advice you would give to a rookie officer who may see some sort of unethical behavior or something that really makes them uncomfortable. What advice would you give them in reporting it or talking about it if they are fearful of retaliation?
What I would make sure that they understood are the mechanisms available to them to report that. Do they have a duty to report that? Absolutely. Some of the laws that changed after George Floyd are relative to that specifically, where officers are required to report. If they don't, they could actually be arrested and charged for whatever crime they witnessed and didn't report.
Oh, wow.
Which I can appreciate the genesis of that, but it comes with problems too. You might see a body cam footage and be like, oh, look, the officer saw that. Well, my camera's pointing this way, but my head's pointing that way. Can't account for that. There's a lot of area there that some cops are not necessarily being charged with. They're being questioned for things that they couldn't possibly see. So I don't think that was a fix, but I think I would make sure that a rookie officer knew this is what the expectation is of you. I think that's where a lot of these things start to go wrong, is where there's an unclear expectation, right? Where someone in the academy will say, listen, you have to operate ethically. It's all about your moral compass and do it right. And it's never spoken again. And then they get on the road and it's like, well, if I say this, this happens to me. No. If that expectation is reinforced time and time again, they know exactly what they have to do and they know exactly how to do it and when to do it. Maybe even it would prevent that behavior because they know the next officer is going to do it, is going to report them, is going to whatever. So I would make sure they knew what the avenues available to them are to report that.
Can I ask you a very random question?
Sure.
Do you still conduct interrogations?
I will, yeah. What I try to do is, if the lead investigator is working the case, I don't want to micromanage, but there are times where if they're not getting through, because everything's about rapport. You and I might connect when I talk with you, and my partner and you, just you're just missing the mark. And sometimes if you're missing the mark, you need to bow out and say, hey, maybe you can do better here. Because right. at the end of the day, it's the outcome of the case that we care about, not our pride, not who got someone to confess or whatever. When those circumstances arrive, I will still do interrogations, yeah.
Well, my question is, every interrogator has a different approach. Some
sure.
are like, I'm your friend, or the other one yeah. is like, cut the shit!
Yeah.
I'm very curious, you, Anthony Rakowski, what yeah. your approach is.
I actually teach interview and interrogation. It's like my favorite aspect of this whole job. Is okay. that, truth be told, there's not one approach. Everybody's different. The rapport building is where it matters, because what you respond to, someone else may not respond to.
Got right? it.
So when I'm talking with you, I believe that you can't come in like a lion. You have nowhere to go at that point. If I'm calm, you're going to be calm. If I'm elevated, you're going to be elevated. It's all about matching and mirroring. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but if you think about rapport, something that you can try to do here, and you'll see this and you'll be like, wow, I never noticed that. When you have an in-depth conversation with somebody and you know that you're connecting with them, look at how they're sitting and look at how you're sitting. And I guarantee you, you're going to be matching each other. Mm. They're going to sit the same way you are. And you can test that. If we're talking and I'm leaning forward and I sit back in my chair, and a couple seconds later, you sit back, we're in rapport. The key is to have conversation with people about, you know, not about the important stuff, about their background, about who they are, what their thoughts are, what your thoughts are. I want them to know I'm a real person. I'm not just marching watching, you know, down the road, you're going to jail, you're whatever. I want to hear what you have to say because it's important. And it truly is important. But once I know we're in rapport and I've built that little bit of trust, that's when you start to ask the questions about whatever it is you're investigating. How you get there, it's different with everybody.
Got it. Mm-hmm. I was just curious.
Jen asks, what does one have to do to be interrogated by Anthony asking for a friend? Anthony, why did you become a cop?
I was an electrician before I was a cop. I'm still an electrician. I really felt like there's more I could do. As an electrician, I kind of pretty quickly became like a foreman and there was nowhere for me to go. And it's like, am I really affecting anybody by being an electrician, right? By wiring your house. If you're a police officer, right, you can actually change people's lives for better. And that was always appealing to me. I didn't take the job because I thought action was cool, right? I truly always wanted to be a detective. I would fall asleep every single night watching like Forensic Files. I was fascinated by it. And that was my career goal. The only way to get there is to be a cop. So that was kind of like what I set my sights towards. And as soon as I got involved with it, I fell in love with the job. And I still love the job. And it's over 20 years in. Definitely a decision that I don't regret. You know, I was fortunate enough too to get where I wanted to go pretty early in my career. So
you and I have talked about how I think that you should carry this to a bigger stage about, you know, joining local politics. I did offer to be your campaign manager, if you recall.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Clearly, in seeing this, someone like you must sit and say, at the very least, those are shitty police officers. They did a horrible investigation.
Yep.
Even
yep.
if you say corruption wasn't involved, you can't look at those cops and be like, attaboy, boys.
Oh, there's training issues. There's so many issues.
What reform would you push for? Let's say you were placed in Canton, a department that is known for corruption or bad work. How would you change things if you could?
So I think some of what we saw with that case is internal cultural issue in that department. I've been part of them where people will do like cultural studies within each department. Kind of gives people an opportunity to say, this is what I see here that I don't like. This is what I see here that I do like. I would 100% start there. What I think is even more important is evaluating when we put certain officers in charge of certain things. I understand certain departments, you can't gain, you know, real world experience if the crimes aren't happening. But we can send you to training. We can send you to schools outside of our department. If we know that officers are going to have to testify someday, like the officer that testified, I can't remember her name.
Cringe-worthy. The one who forgot her memory.
Correct. Yeah. What you saw there was, one, a stress response, because I can tell you from sitting in that seat for a homicide case, it's very stressful. But that was a lack of preparation, a lack of training, a lack of experience that led to that decorum, which just presented that whole department in the worst light you could imagine. So I think training, not in a general sense, but specific trainings relative to those things, it needs to happen. It needs to happen involuntarily, if you will. Like a lot of times now, departments say, if you want to go, sign up, we'll send you. You don't have a choice. You're going, you know? And I think if people, supervisors in those departments are paying attention to know, hey, listen, so-and-so's got subpoenaed to go to trial. We need to prep them for that. Teach them how to testify. There's officers, even in my department, that have 15, 16 years on, have never testified.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah.
It's not their fault, but you have to prepare them for that.
Yeah.
That's where partnerships with the courts is important too, because you can have prosecutors come. Their bread and butter is the courtroom. Have a prosecutor come and teach at your department. This is what we expect. This is what court looks like. This is the questions you're asked. Everybody thinks it's a trick. They're trying to trick me. No, it's laws of evidence. They have to ask you the questions so they can admit the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But officers don't know that. And then they panic like she did.
That was so embarrassing. She was so
very much so.
Anthony, we're going to have you back for an Ask Me Anything because the chat is blowing up. Everyone loves you. I just want to leave with one question. What is your personal message to people who, from this trial or for whatever reason, feel like they cannot trust law enforcement?
I think I would ask that you understand that we're humans. Every single case is different. And what you're seeing that's causing you to say, I can't trust any police officer, right, is specific to the officer that you're looking at. It's not all of us. You know, don't paint us with a broad brush, I guess is what I would ask. But in that same breath, paint us with a broad brush. We owe you the best. We owe that. If you are questioning whether or not you can trust us, in whole, we failed. So don't give us a pass, but just understand, like, there's another side to this that you're not necessarily seeing.
Mm-hmm. I just want to squeeze your stupid face.
And I want to squeeze your chest because it's huge.
Anthony, seriously, the chat is blowing up. We're going to have you back for an AMA. There's like way too many questions. You all hang on to your questions. We can't thank you enough. You're the best. You field all my questions. I'm surprised you haven't changed your number.
I love when you call. I really do. I appreciate you having me on too. And if you want me on again, anytime. All right. It's always a pleasure.
You're all heart. I love it so much. I mean, like, there's just like so much empathy and you're just so good. I want to hug you. And I know I always make jokes about you being handsome and all that stuff. If y'all think he's handsome, wait till you see his wife. They're just the hottest couple ever. But really, you're just, I think what makes you so even more attractive is just your big old fucking heart. You're just a good guy.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Love having you on. Is it Detective Sergeant or Sergeant Detective?
It's Detective Sergeant. Yeah.
Oh, you can spank me for getting it wrong. It's fine.
You'll always be Tony to me. All right, Detective Sergeant, Lieutenant Admiral. All right, you'll be Tony to me.
We cannot thank you enough for coming and filling in the gaps. I'm sure we have lots more questions. Thank you for making time for us. We absolutely love you. Love to Colleen. And we'll see you soon. Joey, say something funny.
I got nothing left. Listen, Anthony, I'm sorry I missed Father's Day. There's always next year. Actually, for Christmas, we sent you a G-string for Pride. But for Christmas, I'll send you some nipple clamps. All right?
Awesome. Perfect. What a great pair.
And you have 24 hours for a full photo shoot with that G-string.
As if he would do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. I have no choice at this point. It's my uniform. Wait,
did Colleen laugh?
She was with me when I opened the box. I'm like, what's this? And pulled it out. We were cracking up.
Did you get my note?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, thank you all for joining. We love you now, bitches.
Love you, Beast. Love you, Anthony.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.